I've always dreamed of being able to order my coffee in Italian like a local, instead of just pointing at the menu and hoping for the best. There's something about speaking another language with real confidence that opens up a whole new world of experiences. That's why I'm so excited about Rosetta Stone Sapphire. It's their biggest launch in over a decade. It takes that research-backed method we all know and trust and adds fresh, cutting-edge features that make it easier than ever to go from knowing a few phrases to speaking naturally about the topics you actually care about. What I love is that you aren't just memorizing vocabulary lists. You learn entirely in your new language through visuals and audio, just like you did as a kid. One of my favorite new features is chat missions. It turns conversation practice into a game, putting you in real-world scenarios, like ordering at a restaurant or asking for directions, and giving you missions to complete. You get real-time feedback along the way, so you build that confidence before you ever have to use your skills in the real world. If you want to take your language skills to the next level, don't wait to try Rosetta Stone Sapphire. Listeners of this podcast can get 20% off their Rosetta Stone Sapphire subscription when they sign up today. This gets you access to Rosetta Stone Sapphire in 25 languages. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10 to redeem your 20% off. That's rosettastone.com/rs10.
How would you like to live in a home where the floors are always clean? Now you can with Matic, the first intuitive cleaning robot designed and assembled in America for families like yours. Matic sees your home the way you do, so it cleans the way you would. Precise visual navigation means it moves gracefully through real lived-in spaces and almost never gets stuck. Its visual intelligence means you can point at a mess and say, Matic, clean this. Matic also understands over 75 languages, so anyone can use it just by talking to it, even the kids and the grandparents. Nobody has to learn another app. It vacuums and mops daily, it's quiet enough to run at night, and can clean in the dark, so you can wake up to clean floors. Matic is rated 4.9 out of 5 by the families who own it. To get your Matic, go to maticrobots.com. That's maticrobots.com. And get a year's supply of free HEPA bags with your purchase today. Go to maticrobots.com/odyssey, a $96 value at no cost to you. That's maticrobots.com/AUDACY.
The vets drank psilocybin, a psychoactive compound found in some mushrooms, put on blindfolds to shut out distractions, and lay down. The retreat was organized and paid for by the Heroic Hearts Project, a nonprofit that's helped more than 1,000 U.S. veterans with combat-related PTSD access psychedelics.
Them seeking this type of unauthorized therapy is just another indication on why we need to study this further and get it to a safe and effective medical environment.
Every year on Mardi Gras Day, an extraordinary sight emerges from the back streets of New Orleans. They call themselves Mardi Gras Indians, or Black Masking Indians. And they roam the neighborhoods in dazzling hand-sewn suits. Tonight, we will show you the sights and sounds of one of America's last true secret societies.
Here she is taking a flamethrower to her own book. Margaret Atwood was firing back at would-be book burners. Her books have been banned for content deemed overly sexual, morally corrupt, anti-Christian.
The government put out an edict to all school boards saying that they couldn't have any books in the library that had either direct or indirect sex. What is indirect sex?
I'm Bill Whitaker.
I'm John Wertheim.
I'm Anderson Cooper.
I'm Leslie Stahl. Those stories tonight on 60 Minutes.
Matching outfits, extravagant birthdays, many nicknames, a few classic moves of a dog-obsessed parent. At Ollie, they're obsessed with how obsessed you are with your pup, which is why they obsess over giving your dog the best. Ollie's fresh, human-grade recipes are developed by real chefs and backed by vet nutritionists. The meals are perfectly portioned and come with a pup-tainer and scoop for easy storing and mess-free serving, delivering the best experience for you and your pup. And through the Ollie app, you can actually check in on your dog's health with real vets. By uploading a picture, their team can check your dog's weight, digestion, teeth, and coat. They'll then provide next steps on how to keep them thriving. And because they're just as obsessed as you are, there's zero judgment if you check in every day. You could say Ollie feeds the obsession. Go to ollie.com/firstbox and use code FIRSTBOX to get 70% off your welcome kit. Ollie, feed the obsession.
Latte for Keenan?
That's me.
Hey, you're...
Yeah.
Buying a car online on AutoTrader?
Really? But unlike other sites, you can start online, test drive with a local dealer, then finish online or at the dealership.
Really? Wait, are you...
Yep, it's key.
...able to finish in person without starting the process over?
Really? Your info stays with you every step of the way.
Cool. Enjoy.
It's Keenan Thompson. Buy your car online on AutoTrader. Really.
In 2024, the Veterans Administration announced for the first time it would begin funding its own clinical trials to treat post-traumatic stress disorder, depression, and addiction using two psychedelic drugs, psilocybin and MDMA. Even if the trials are successful, it would be years before the VA could prescribe either drug for its patients. But as we first reported last year, thousands of veterans who are suffering are not waiting. Desperate for help, they're attending psychedelic retreats in countries where the drugs are legal to use, mostly in indigenous ceremonies. We were invited to join 9 veterans who traveled to the west coast of Mexico for a psychedelic journey they hoped would finally help ease their pain.
They came to Mexico from all over the United States, a group of 9 veterans with invisible wounds that are hard to heal. Their destination, a remote village near Puerto Vallarta, for a week-long psychedelic retreat. It was a voyage into the unknown, but a risk worth taking for TJ Duff, a former Navy sailor.
Are you optimistic?
Being optimistic is hard for me because I've been through a lot of therapy, a lot of different treatments, and not a lot of success.
Duff was 18 when he joined the Navy. Months into his first deployment aboard the USS Cole, he says he narrowly escaped death when 2 suicide bombers attacked the ship in Yemen, killing 17 sailors.
Everyone around me was killed. There's bodies alive and dead being piled up in the midships, and I think that's really where I just started holding everything in.
I don't have it where I'm jumping in ditches when I hear loud noises. My PTSD is kind of a self-destructive form.
Randy Weaver is a police officer in New York. A former staff sergeant in the Army, he was diagnosed with PTSD in 2007 after returning home from tours in Bosnia, Iraq, and Afghanistan.
It's the constant, you know, what if I had done this? What if we did that? You know.
Are those things you want to revisit while you're taking the psilocybin?
Yeah, if I could revisit them and see them maybe from a different perspective, like not where I failed somebody.
Is there a particular incident that you feel you failed somebody?
Yeah, so March 18th, 20 years ago.
In 2004, Weaver's platoon was caught in a firefight in an Afghan village. 2 soldiers were killed, one of them his friend, Staff Sergeant Anthony Lagman. Weaver's worn this bracelet with Lagman's name on it since coming home.
You've been wearing that for 20 years?
Yeah, every day.
Weaver says he's tried nearly every treatment for PTSD the VA offers, including talk therapy, exposure therapy, meditation, and antidepressants.
You get to a point where you're so mentally exhausted and you've created so much destruction that your demons tell yourself that your family would be better off without you. And when those demons tell you those things every day, it's something hard to ignore.
Will this help with that?
I hope so.
The retreat was organized and paid for by the Heroic Hearts Project, a nonprofit that's helped more than 1,000 U.S. veterans with combat-related PTSD access psychedelics.
I came home super angry, super anxious, hypervigilant. You know, that led to a pretty nasty divorce.
Ed Glover was in Afghanistan with the Marines. He's been a firefighter for 22 years.
I feel like one or two traumatic events you may be able to recover from, but kind of seeing it day in, day out really takes its toll.
As the vets talked, it became clear some of their struggles began long before they joined the military.
My family life was just always this constant conflict.
Navy vet Michael Giardina had an emotionally abusive father who killed himself 17 years ago. His sister died by suicide 5 months before he came here.
My daughter asked my ex-wife if I was going to kill myself, and I'm not. I just want to get better.
To qualify for this retreat, they had to work with their doctors to wean off any antidepressant or anxiety medication they might be taking because of how it could interact with the psychedelics. They also had to have a medical screening and no family history of psychosis or schizophrenia. When we were there, a local doctor was on site, but no mental health professionals.
I appreciate you guys for putting the faith in me, the faith in us coming here.
Jesse Gould, a former Army Ranger, founded the Heroic Hearts Project in 2017 after he tried another psychedelic, ayahuasca, at a retreat in Peru. Gould says psychedelics can help veterans revisit traumatic moments in ways they may be unable to with other therapies.
The value, what we're finding with psychedelics, is it's a very individualistic journey. You know, it comes at you, it brings up the emotions, it heightens your senses, and so you're having to face it. And so that's why you see such big revelations, because it's giving you the tools to actually get there.
Do you worry that some who see this as sort of the last hope may end up disappointed?
I worry that we're at the situation where people are having to go to other countries for their last hope. That indicates a major flaw in the system.
The orange one? Okay.
Heroic Hearts hired traditional healers to conduct three psychedelic ceremonies, the first two with psilocybin, a psychoactive compound found in some mushrooms. It's been used as medicine by indigenous communities in Mexico and elsewhere for centuries.
You don't need to be strong. All we need for this experience and to receive the healing is humbleness.
The healers stirred ground-up mushrooms into a tea. The vets drank it, put on blindfolds to shut out distractions, and lay down. At first, it seemed like the group might have traveled thousands of miles for a midday nap. But then, about an hour in, we saw Michael Giardina raise his hand for help. His foot soon started to shake, followed by his whole body. By hour three, it was clear the psilocybin had kicked in. Randy Weaver and TJ Duff barely seemed to move, while firefighter Ed Glover appeared caught between rapture and deep sorrow.
When you let go of me, the truth will all be so simple and clear.
5 hours later, when the psilocybin began to wear off, the vets removed their eye masks and found the heat of the afternoon sun. The next day, the group gathered to discuss what they'd gone through.
It literally felt like an exorcism. My foot was going crazy. I could kind of feel like my body was convulsing.
I felt like I was taking every last breath of any victim, patient, or friend that I had lost. So I really struggled to breathe yesterday.
Well, I've never done anything like that before.
Randy Weaver appeared to find some of what he traveled all this way for.
One thing that I remember very vividly was flying back with the guys that we lost. Like being on that medevac, even though I wasn't there in the real world, I was there spiritually with them.
TJ Duff, however, found it unsettling and at times scary.
I've heard a lot of your guys' stories, and I did not get as immersive as you guys did.
I'm kind of glad I didn't, honestly, because I was kind of afraid of that.
That night, Duff took part in another psilocybin ceremony, but the next day he left. He later told us the whole experience caused a dangerous decline in his mental health. He's now back on antidepressant medication. The last ceremony of the retreat was with 5-MeO-DMT, a powerful and fast-acting psychedelic secreted from a toad. After returning home, the vets had several virtual meetings with a Heroic Hearts Project counselor.
I think my biggest takeaway was making sure I make the time to take care of myself.
The Veterans Administration warns against self-medicating with psychedelics or using them as part of a self-treatment program. But when we spoke to its top doctor, Sharif Elnahal, in 2024, he was enthusiastic about their potential.
Do these retreats concern you?
They can concern me because there's no way to monitor, certify, make sure that they're actually safe environments. They're seeking these therapies because they do not see our current options for them to be effective enough, and they're in a state of desperation. And that in and of itself, them seeking this type of unauthorized therapy, is just another indication on why we need to study this further and get it to a safe and effective medical environment.
In 2024, the FDA rejected a pharmaceutical company's application to use the psychedelic MDMA in combination with therapy as a treatment for PTSD, after an FDA advisory panel said there wasn't enough evidence it was safe or effective. The VA is now involved in 20 clinical trials using psychedelics, including MDMA and psilocybin, to treat several mental health disorders. Dr. Elnahal told us a small Phase 2 trial by the VA using MDMA and therapy to treat PTSD, completed 2 years ago, showed real promise.
45% have gone into complete remission, which is essentially a normal emotional state that is unheard of with prolonged exposure, cognitive processing, and certainly SSRIs, the current standard of care options.
Almost half of the people who came in with PTSD and did MDMA therapy at the VA were cured?
Yes.
So you have no doubt that this works?
We need to do larger Phase 3 clinical trials. That's the best way scientifically to understand what the true adverse events are and whether we can reproduce these results in larger populations of veterans. I'm very optimistic we will be able to demonstrate that.
How long do you think it will be before veterans can go to the VA and get this therapy?
It could be another couple of years. The incoming administration is going to take, you know, a pretty bold stance on this.
What makes you optimistic that the new administration is going to be a believer in this?
We've heard the nominee for HHS, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., talk about what he thinks the potential breakthrough therapy is. We'll see what the stance is of other health officials. But that's really promising.
Nearly a year after that retreat in Mexico, we checked in with the 9 veterans who attended. 8 of them told us their symptoms had improved and called their experience with psychedelics life-changing. Ed Glover said he felt like a weight had been lifted off his shoulders.
How are you doing?
Very well.
Shortly after coming home from the retreat, he decided to retire as a firefighter.
Prior to the retreat, I thought about taking my life just about every day. I had a very close call. The note, the gun, that is no longer the case.
You haven't had thoughts of killing yourself since then?
Not one.
And Randy Weaver says his suicidal ideations have stopped as well.
I don't have any of those thoughts since going through this journey.
That's remarkable.
I would say, yeah.
You had told the group afterward that you had visualized people on a medevac helicopter that you had served with.
Yeah.
What was the impact of that?
In combat, things happen quickly. One minute you're talking to your friend, and the next minute, you know, you're putting him in a body bag. That causes a gap in your psyche. So to be able to revisit those incidences, you know, seeing those helicopters come back with friends, it brings a little peace to you. Yeah.
In April, President Trump signed an executive order seeking to accelerate the research and approval of some psychedelic drugs as mental health treatments, including psilocybin and MDMA, by directing federal agencies to ease restrictions that have long limited scientists' ability to study them.
The first few weeks back at school set the tone for the entire year. But with new teachers, schedules, and expectations, it can feel like a lot. If you're looking to help your child start strong and stay confident, I've been using IXL to make that transition so much easier. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts, from pre-K through 12th grade, it adapts to each child's level and pace, making it easy to spot and close learning gaps in just a few minutes a day before those gaps can snowball. Plus, it's trusted nationwide. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL, and it's used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. It's an easy, cost-effective way to get kids back into a learning routine and walking into class feeling ready and reassured. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. Listeners can get an exclusive 20% off an IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
On Reddit, true crime doesn't come from journalists. It comes from the victims, the witnesses, and sometimes the suspects themselves.
Every Tuesday on Crimes of Reddit, we read these posts out loud.
I'm Sabrina Dianaroga.
And I'm Alexis Linkletter. One of us brings the story, the other goes in blind, reacting in real time, just like you.
New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Crimes of Reddit, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
The right window treatments change everything. Your sleep, your privacy, the way every room looks and feels. At Blinds.com, we've spent 30 years making it surprisingly simple to get exactly what your home needs. We've covered over 25 million windows and have 50,000 five-star reviews to prove we deliver. Whether you DIY it or want a pro to handle everything from measure to install, we have you covered. Real design professionals, free samples, zero pressure. Right now, get up to 45% off site-wide, plus get a free professional measure at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions apply.
Every year on Mardi Gras morning, something extraordinary emerges from the back streets of New Orleans. Groups of black revelers most tourists will never see. They call themselves Mardi Gras Indians or Black Masking Indians, and they roam the city's neighborhoods in dazzling hand-sewn suits. As we first told you in April, the tradition dates to the 1800s as a way to honor their ancestors and, according to Mardi Gras Indian lore, is rooted in profound respect for Native Americans, said to have sheltered enslaved Africans who had escaped. It's an expression of joy, protest, and pride passed from generation to generation. Tonight, you'll meet the artists and musicians preserving the culture and take in the sights and sounds of one of America's last true secret societies. If you're lucky enough to find them, you'll discover a vibrant tapestry of African, Caribbean, and Native American threads, part of the cultural gumbo that is New Orleans. These extravagant suits, plumed, bejeweled, beaded, and sequined, are handcrafted in secret for an entire year to be unveiled on Mardi Gras Day. Chawa, that's Big Chief Damon Melanson of the Young Seminole Hunters announcing his arrival.
Chawa! Chawa, who the best? Who got the best beadwork? Who got the best rhinestones? Who could sing the best? Who got the biggest tribe? Who don't? That's what it is.
There are dozens of groups calling themselves tribes. The leader is known as the Big Chief, who along with his Big Queen and their crew strut through historically black neighborhoods searching for other tribes. When Big Chief Damon meets another Big Chief, they square off in mock battle, competing to show whose suit is, in their words, the prettiest. We saw Damon face down tribes all over the city.
What just happened back there? It looked like he just bowed out. But you won.
Yeah, I think
you were
I
the
did.
Prettiest.
Yeah, yeah. Because yeah. We on fire. We on fire. We on fire.
Who are you on Mardi Gras Day?
When I put that suit on, I'm Big Chief Damon Malone, so Cognitive.
Is that different from the Demond who's sitting here in front
of
me now?
Yes, indeed. Yes,
indeed. How different?
Somebody that's ready to honor everything that I was taught by my elders. And I'm ready to kill you dead with the needle and thread.
Needle and thread to do the work of his heart and hands. Big Chief Demond and his wife Alicia, meticulous as surgeons, sew beads the size of chia seeds on a canvas and stitch rhinestones in place with dental floss. Painting with beads, making artwork for his suit.
What to you makes a suit pretty?
The hookup.
What do you mean?
How it's laid out, how the velvet gets around it, how you break the feathers, how you manipulate the feathers, how many rows of rhinestones you have around the beadwork. That's the perfection of knowing your hookup if you're that good.
Oh, wow.
This year's suit tells the story of the Amistad, a slave ship seized by the captive Africans in 1839, led by a man called Sinkay. This panel shows when the Africans won their freedom in a case that went to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Look at this.
John Quincy Adams, he was one of the lawyers on the case.
My God. So you're doing this like nonstop?
I sew from 6 in the morning to 12 at night.
And this is every day?
Every day. Every day.
Why?
That's it, man. Without these beads, I couldn't breathe.
And every breath is hard earned. It can take thousands of dollars and thousands of hours to design and sew a suit. For years, Big Chief Demond was laying concrete and cooking lobsters, pouring all his spare time and money into his creations. He now makes a living as an artist. This year's suit cost $25,000. But this flamboyant display is not a beauty pageant. It's the flowering of deep roots.
The community is what makes me, it's my fuel, the people.
Your fuel?
Yeah, it fuels the fire because you're doing it for them. Like you do this for your community and your people.
It is the greatest kept secret in America and throughout the world today is the Mardi Gras Indian culture. This culture dates back to slavery days.
I have hope.
Howard Miller is the president of the Mardi Gras Indian Council, a governing body for the tribes, and chief of the Creole Wild West. He told us it's a culture shaped by resistance to oppression and sustained by resilience.
How would you explain the Mardi Gras Indians to people who don't have a clue what they're about?
Well, we weren't allowed to go to those big parades and stuff. So this, in our community, was about uplifting our people in a proudly manner.
There's no one definitive origin story, but historians have found references to the tradition dating back to the mid-1800s. According to stories passed down through generations, when enslaved people escaped New Orleans, Native Americans in the bayous gave them refuge. Today, many tribe members claim indigenous and African roots. Masking, some say, began as a way to honor those indigenous tribes while disguising or masking their African identity.
Because here in America, especially here in the South, everything about Africa was forbidden. So we went behind a mask as Indians to practice our culture.
Was it easy to join a tribe?
No, it wasn't.
In 1969, it took then 12-year-old Howard Miller 6 weeks just to get in the door of a big chief's house, the tribe's headquarters.
I had a friend of mine, he was in it, and I would go around there with him trying to get in, but they wouldn't let me in the gate.
Wouldn't even let you in the gate.
No, I had to stay outside the yard while he go in there. Eventually, I got on the porch, and I was watching all this here magic with the suits and what they was doing, and it started a rainstorm. Thunder, lightning, raining hard. I'm getting wet. And the chief said, "Is that boy still on the porch?" And somebody said, "Yep, tell that boy to come on in here." That's how I got in the house.
We visited the home of Joseph Pierre Boudreau, better known as Big Chief Monk of the Golden Eagles tribe. Big chiefs aren't just heads of their tribes. They're mentors and community leaders, and Big Chief Monk is one of the most respected. But the working-class neighborhoods that sustain the tribes have been thinned and scattered by Hurricane Katrina and gentrification. 84-year-old Monk Boudreau is determined to hold on to the community and legacy and is preparing for his 72nd year of masking.
If he can't do it,
Let the world know that we're here and we've been here. We ain't just got here, we've been here.
You didn't even go see that.
We joined the Boudreaux's in a sewing circle before Mardi Gras. For decades, Big Chief Monk sewed suits for his children and grandchildren. This year, they gathered and helped him sew his.
My whole family's talent, you know, by just sitting there watching me for all these years, you know, as kids. They were always right there while I was sewing, sitting right there.
I sew all night long.
All those long hours of sewing inspired a song. In the 1970s, Monk was one of the first to marry Mardi Gras Indian chants to New Orleans funk. His albums earned 2 Grammy nominations. His son Joseph and grandson Juwan often sang backup. We met them, Monk's daughter Winoka and grandson Marwan, at one of Monk's favorite New Orleans clubs, Tipitina's.
What's his impact on the culture?
The impact that Michael Jordan had on basketball.
Yeah.
I'll put it
like that.
Like, you can't mention Mardi Gras without Monk.
Yeah.
Our achievement.
I never saw him take a break. Like, I never saw him say, oh, this year I'm not coming.
You know, my father, he took something that was made for the culture in the streets, and he was one of the pioneers that took it global. There's not a person in the city of New Orleans that sews an Indian suit, and they don't put on his music.
Hey, what you wanna buy?
Big Chief Demond included.
Lord, that man make me cry. Like, Monk, he do me something.
He's moved by the music and the weight of his calling. The expense almost left him destitute.
You sacrificed a lot to make these suits.
Mm-hmm.
You lost a house because you were so consumed with making your suit?
Yeah, yeah. Because it's hard.
I know it's hard, but
it's hard.
Losing a house didn't make you stop.
What? Why? Why?
Because you got put out of your house.
No, indeed. I'm preserving the culture.
And the fine art world has taken notice. His suits and beaded portraits have been displayed in museums and galleries all over the world. It's allowed him to buy a new house, every inch of which was covered with plumes and patches the evening before Mardi Gras.
Y'all ready?
After working through the night, Big Chief Demond emerged transformed in a suit that stood more than 10 feet tall and weighed 120 pounds. He used a U-Haul to move from place to place, but he tells us there was something else carrying him along.
The spirits come down every time we put it on, especially with me. You know, my elders live through me, and it's a opening of the gates.
What do you mean?
That means they came down, they coming through me to walk in their shoes on the streets of New Orleans, like they taught us. So what we doing is we preserving it for that next generation to be able to walk like I walk. It's going to change my life.
The spirits, it seems, are opening other gates for him. This suit is currently on display at the Venice Biennale in Italy, the world's most prestigious art exhibition.
Do you think your success in the art world will encourage a younger generation to carry on with this culture?
I pray it does. And I pray one of them picks up a needle and won't do what I do, you know?
Preserving tradition for the next generation. We heard that a lot here. It's what Big Chief Monk lives for. But this year, he was too weak to march with his tribe. Just before Mardi Gras, he was diagnosed with cancer. But he came out on his porch to see the tribe off with the Mardi Gras Indians' most sacred hymn.
What's it like for you to see your tribe march off and you're not joining them this year?
Well, I knew that time was gonna come, but I didn't know when.
But you got to see this day.
Yeah, right. Well, I was gonna see this day.
And the day is coming, he told us, for him to pass his crown on to the next chief.
Like I say, if you don't keep it going, if you lose it, it's gone forever. It's finished. You know, things just disappeared. Not here in New Orleans.
Not here in New Orleans?
No. Uh-uh. So, keep it rolling.
Keeping it rolling and chanting and showing off. A culture in full bloom. Too pretty, too rooted to fade. Just yet.
The Anatomy of a Showdown.
It's warfare. It's basically a battle.
At 60MinutesOvertime.com.
Imagine you're finally cleaning out your gutters when the smoke alarm starts blaring from inside. Smoke billows out of the window. ADT's affordable DIY systems are built for those moments where everything can change in a second. They're easy to set up, customizable, and help keep your home safe with 24/7 monitoring. No one wants to feel unsafe at home, and with ADT, you won't. ADT prioritizes your peace of mind with the most company-operated monitoring centers in the industry. With the ADT Plus app, you stay in control from virtually anywhere. Don't wait to prepare for an emergency. When every second counts, count on ADT. Visit ADT.com or call 1-800-ADT-ASAP.
I've realized lately that the products I use every single morning genuinely affect how I feel for the rest of the day. If something feels heavy, greasy, overly makeup-y, or complicated, I just stop reaching for it. That's why I've been loving Primally Pure's new Sun Serum Tinted SPF. It gives mineral SPF 30 protection and enough coverage to make my skin look even and healthy, but it still looks like my skin. It has this really fresh, lived-in glow, and their lip and cheek tint has become one of those products I keep throwing on throughout the day because it makes me look instantly more awake and put together in like 10 seconds. The whole vibe just feels very effortless. Skin first, clean girl beauty, products that enhance your skin. If you've been wanting your routine to feel lighter, simpler, and more natural this summer, definitely check out Primally Pure's Sun Serum and Lip and Cheek Tints.
You're an 86-year-old titan of literature, have been for a half century now. You're Canada's best-known author, 64 books and counting. And increasingly, you find your work on lists of banned books, scrubbed from 135 American school districts. Yes, that includes your breakthrough work, the dystopian novel The Handmaid's Tale. But you've also been censored for work like The Testaments and The Blind Assassin, both of which won the Booker Prize, the top award for English language fiction. What to do? Sure, you take to the keyboard and write sternly worded opinion pieces, but as we first told you last fall, if you're the indomitable Margaret Atwood, you don't stop there. Here she is taking a flamethrower to her own book. Atwood was firing back at would-be book burners by torching an unburnable edition. It was all promotion for a charity auction to benefit PEN America, a nonprofit that champions free speech. Atwood's books have been banned for content deemed overly sexual, morally corrupt, anti-Christian. She told us she was particularly peeved when a recent ban came from Edmonton, Alberta, in her own country.
The government put out an edict to all school boards saying that they couldn't have any books in the library that had either direct or indirect sex. What is indirect sex? You had any indirect sex lately?
Second wave feminism here.
Atwood speaks as she writes, with a mix of wisdom and deadpan wit. Last fall, she invited us into her Toronto home.
Do you know offhand how many languages your books have been translated in?
Well, we say over 50 for everything. How old are you? Over 50. How many books have you written? Over 50.
How many awards have you won?
Over 50.
I thought so.
Under his eye.
Under his eye.
Published in 1985, The Handmaid's Tale depicts a near-future America overtaken by religious dictatorship, where a dwindling number of fertile women are forced to cloak themselves in red and bear children for the elite.
Give me children, or else I die.
The book would sell more than 10 million copies and spawn an Emmy-winning Hulu series. Beyond that, its scarlet costume would become a uniform of real-life protest and resistance.
Shame! Shame!
Handmaid's Tale is your magnum opus.
You think?
Your Great Gatsby. How are you with that?
Well, I would question the premise.
You would?
Yeah, it's not due to me or the excellence of the book. It's partly the twists and turns of history.
With the ongoing rollback of reproductive rights and the eventual overturning of Roe v. Wade in 2022, The Handmaid's Tale began, for many readers, to feel eerily prescient.
Had it been so that none of this ever got enacted, then it would probably be sitting on a shelf somewhere and people would be saying, oh, jolly good yarn, but it didn't happen.
Or didn't it? In 2003's Oryx and Crake, for instance, Atwood wrote of environmental collapse and a global pandemic. Pick a catastrophe, any catastrophe. Before the real world did its thing, she warned about it in her fiction.
It wasn't, you know, this is going to happen without a doubt. This could happen. This might happen, so you should be on the watch for it.
What is your relationship with this idea that you're the prophet of doom, this Cassandra, the forecaster of dystopia?
I think I'm very positive. I didn't kill everybody off at the end. You know, some people do.
These are rare books, so a lot of them are pretty obscure.
If Atwood can see around corners, it's because her visions have historical precedent. They come rooted in actual events. At the Thomas Fisher Rare Book Library in Toronto, Atwood has archived stacks of her research. That is the hundreds of news clippings that substantiate her plots.
So this is folder upon folder of your research for Handmaid's Tale.
Oh, yeah, lots of it.
She writes by a strict rule. If it didn't happen somewhere at some time, it doesn't make it into the pages of her fiction.
Women forced to have babies.
Mm-hmm. Communists are making women have babies. Persistent non-pregnancy will be considered a crime against the state.
It's not all doom and gloom. Atwood showed us the cover she designed for her first volume of poetry. She also writes short stories and children's books. For her new book, A New Genre, her memoir, Book of Lives, published last November, takes the full sweep of her life, starting with a free-range childhood spent in the deep wilderness of Quebec. She was homeschooled until the age of 12, while her father did fieldwork on insects as an entomologist.
You wrote, some families stop for ice cream on the side of the road. You stop for infestation.
We stopped for infestation. So what was that like? You screeched to a halt. Father would get out of the car with his tarpaulin and his axe, and he would go to the infestation. He would spread the tarp out under the tree and hit the trunk with an axe, and then the things would fall out, and he would collect them.
And you're in the back seat thinking what?
Oh, no, we were usually out of the car watching him do it.
What did you learn watching him go to work?
I think probably growing up with the biologists makes you quite particular about details. Because you're not saying, that's a butterfly. You're saying, what kind of butterfly? You're not saying, that's a tree. You usually know what kind of tree.
That's what draws people to reading.
Intent on spinning details into prose and becoming a writer, Atwood enrolled at Victoria College at the University of Toronto.
Well, poetry was the big form in Canada in the 60s.
A young poet, she hit the reading circuit and performed in student plays and reviews here at Hart House, one of Canada's oldest theaters.
No, I'm just a show-off.
And when Margaret Atwood wants to show off, you surrender the stage.
You have to stand over there. Hold my purse.
Here's not just any curtsy, but she informed us the 17th century Jacobean court curtsy she learned for a college production. We told you she's a stickler for detail.
How do I respond to that?
Oh, you bow. Yeah. Thank you.
You remember that?
Why are you so surprised that I remember that?
Before we left the theater, Atwood showed us another party trick.
I'm not getting vibes. Okay.
You're not getting vibes from me?
No. Okay. We're doing the classic Renaissance hand reading.
Yes, she reads palms, another mode for investigation.
People might think that you're just a very reasonable sort of rational person, but in fact, you have this other, this intuition. So some people stop there, and they're very logical, and that's it. You are not one of those people. And we can see that you will never be a murderous dictator, for which we are pleased.
Well, I got that going for me.
Back to our protagonist, when she graduated in 1961, Canadian writers were encouraged to pursue careers outside the country.
Give us a sense of the Canadian lit scene
when you were in college.
What Canadian lit scene?
Still, Atwood stayed and helped found the country's now thriving literary institutions. Along the way, she met another writer, the late Graham Gibson, who would become her longtime partner. So quintessentially Canadian, their courtship peaked with a canoe trip.
We were both the kinds of people that if the canoe trip hadn't worked out, that would have been it.
Good barometer for a relationship.
Yeah, if you can deal with the canoe trip, you can probably deal with lots of other things too.
And they did. Gibson came to the relationship with some baggage, a quote, undivorced wife and two kids. In her memoir, Atwood confronts the complications of the blended family.
Could I ask you to read a bit for us?
Yes. There are several letters in this book from me to my inner advice columnist. Everybody has one. Dear inner advice columnist, sorry to bother you.
Atwood uses the columnist device to confess that though she and Graham have a daughter of their own, she wants more children.
We are back at the farm after Scotland, and I've brought up the subject of a second child. I would like one, but Graham has said that a total of three is enough for him. I feel deprived, resentful, and disrespected.
If that sounds harsh, listen to the columnist's response, the advice she gave herself.
Oh, for heaven's sakes, count your blessings. Some people don't know when they're well off. Many would give the shirt off their back to have your luck in men. Suck it up. Cherish your child. Get another cat. Your inner advice columnist. You can chase, he's rather severe.
That's very get over yourself advice you gave yourself.
Very get over yourself advice, but Canadians are pretty get over yourself people.
The Handmaid's Tale!
Humility aside, Canada's leading literary figure has become something of a cult figure and a leading voice on all things Canadian. We asked her about the recent chill between her country and the United States as President Trump raises tariffs and threatens to turn our northern neighbors into a 51st state. Atwood says the Canadian response is best summed up by one phrase.
It's a hockey thing, and it was this character called Gordie Howe, who is a very revered hockey player. And elbows up is when somebody gets you into the corner and you block them by putting your elbow up. And it means, don't mess with me. And for those who speak of the 51st state, I do point out that it wouldn't be just one state.
What do you mean?
It's very big. You can't make the whole thing just one state. And anyway, Quebec would never stand for it. You think you're going to make them part of a unilingual big entity? Think again.
Atwood is a student of government, power, and the overreaches of both. She wrote much of The Handmaid's Tale on a rented typewriter in 1984 West Berlin. She recalls hearing sonic booms from the other side of the wall. In her ventures to the Eastern Bloc, she witnessed policing, paranoia, and the absence of freedom. In her memoir, too, she addresses the erosion of democracy.
You say the overriding ordinary civil liberties is one of the signposts on the road to dictatorship. Do you see the U.S. on that road right now?
I don't think I would be wrong if I said it's concerning. There are certain things that totalitarian coups always do.
Like what?
One of them is trying to get control of the media. But the other thing is making the judicial arm part of the executive. In other words, judges just do what the chief guy tells them to.
If you're saying the signposts, the signifiers of totalitarian society are...
There's some warning lights flashing for sure.
Amid the warning lights, a series based on The Testaments, her sequel to The Handmaid's Tale, began streaming on Hulu this year. But just when you think you can predict on which side of the political divide Atwood falls, she confounds by saying something like this.
Just for the record, I've always been attacked more from the left than I have from the right.
Why's that?
Well, I think the right thinks I'm irrelevant. And the left thinks that I should have been preaching their sermon, whatever it may happen to be, and that I am therefore a traitor for not having done that which they themselves would do.
And what's your response to that?
It's unprintable. It involves a finger. Do I see a little blush? Do
I
see a little
out.
Bit
yeah,
of a blush?
She may turn us red. She did not turn us to stone.
I'm paraphrasing here, but in your memoir, you say you sometimes cut this Medusa-like figure with a Medusa-like stare with interviewers. I feel like we're doing okay.
The earlier me.
Yeah.
The earlier me. Now I'm a nice old lady, so you don't have to be worried.
Why the pivot?
I got older. I became a blonde.
This was my way of saying I enjoyed this conversation.
Oh, is that your way of saying it? So why aren't you a scary old witch? Is that your way of saying it?
Banking has stood still for decades. Slow, clunky, and designed around its own convenience, not yours. Mercury was built to end that. Fast, elegant, and works the way you'd expect best-in-class software to work. No fighting outdated systems. No nickel and diming. Visit Mercury.com to apply in minutes and experience the difference for yourself. Mercury is a fintech company, not an FDIC-insured bank. Banking services provided through Choice Financial Group and Column NA, members FDIC.